Welcome to the Parenting is Hard Work podcast. We're grateful to have you with us today, and I'm here with Elena Svetslot, and she's from the Netherlands, but we get together regularly and talk about parenting issues, and we're in a series right now talking about the Biblical Parenting Coaching Program and kind of taking you through the 8-week program and the things that we teach. Maybe you can just take these ideas and apply them in your home, or maybe you'd like to have a coach work with you, but we want you to know what these principles are. They work, they're powerful, and of course, we take a lot of tangents with families to deal with their specific challenges, but these are the general ideas that we're practicing in the family, and they're quite powerful. So Elena, welcome. I'm glad you're here with me today. We're going to enter into week two, I think, today.
That is correct, Dr. Scott, indeed. Very good to be back together because we're having a very exciting series of podcasts this time around. And the beginning of the year provides a lot of opportunities for parents to start something new, and we would really like to support that growth in every family. And indeed, we are going to focus today on week two of our Biblical Parenting Coaching Program with something that I'm sure many parents will be very happy to hear about. We've been talking about in various other episodes about specific elements of the week two. So you'll be familiar with it if you listen to our podcast. And we really want to encourage parents to share with us how they experienced the first week, if they've tried to put in practice any of our suggested activities and the instruction routine. So please let us know if you have any experiences you want to share with us. With that being said, Dr. Scott, let's dive in week two. What happens in week two?
Well, first thing we do as coaches is we listen to the family and find out the parents, what happened in week one? Did your child respond well to the instruction routine? What challenges did you have? Remember, we're just getting started. So often we're seeing some major changes take place right away. Some children, though, are resistant to this. So we're moving forward. But in week one, we focused on the getting things done department of life. This is where training takes place, characters develop, responsibilities built, obligation increases in a child's heart. All these good things happen when we give children instructions. And I want to stay there just for a moment because in week two, we move children to a different part of this training in following instructions by talking about more about this idea of cooperation. So in week one, we moved from resistance to compliance. That's our goal. And now in week two, we move from compliance to cooperation. I usually describe this with a rope. So in week one, it's like your child's pulling against you on a rope as you're trying to get things done around the house. You're pulling around all the time. But in week two, we've made some progress. So now there's still this rope, but they're not pulling as much against it. Hopefully, that's the goal. And then now we're moving toward this new approach of dropping the rope completely and both parents working and child working together in a cooperative manner. So one of the assignments that I like to give in this week two is to have this discussion with the child that says something like this, another vision meeting, as we talked in the last session, which says, you're doing well, we're making some progress on the instruction routine, but I want you to understand that this week we're gonna work on cycles. So what I mean by that is if you get the whole cycle done, then you've been successful. Now, many children believe in their hearts that following instructions means doing the task, even if they have a bad attitude, but they got it done or partially done, and they think they're done. Hmm. We're saying to them, this isn't only about the task. This is about the process. And there are three steps in the process, and they require that you remember these steps and you work on them. That's what cooperation is. I call your name, you come right away. The first time without being reminded. I give you a task to do, you say, okay, Dad, without being prompted again, and then you report back on your own without somebody having to remind you. So when you do all three of those things, then that is a successful cycle. And so that's what we're looking for this week. Can you do the cycle? So we're going to actually practice them. And we're going to say to a child, we'll call his name. And when he comes, we're going to say, okay, good, I'm glad you came. Your next job is to go and do this. And they start to do it. And you go, well, wait a minute. I didn't get an answer back. Let's go back and start all over again so we can get a cycle down. And so go over and play with the toys again, and I'm going to call your name. And so we're working on it to help a child grow in this way and learn how to respond better to the to the instruction. So we're kind of upping the expectation in the instruction routine here.
Dr. Scott, how would you help parents or what advice would you give them if they see indeed their child doing something, but they don't have that joy or that, let's say, they don't do it with a willing heart. You see that they're, you know, struggling and they do it against. Do you, is it in your experience something that changes over time, or should they be doing something specifically to help that change?
It's a good question. And I would suggest that we're looking for approximately right during our first couple weeks here. So we are, if a child's doing it even with a bad attitude, we might not address the bad attitude at first because we're trying to get the cycle down. We're trying to get this pattern moving, something new happening in this child's heart. And as we continue on, we're going to tighten it up more and more, and we are going to require a better attitude. But we have to have some other solutions in play, and that's why we're going to go in week two to the beginning of cycle number two. And when we have cycle number two in play, then we can do more correction, not just training, and that's going to help us a bit.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's something indeed that can really bring a lot of excitement because we are already seeing hopefully some change by this time, by week two. And I think it's going to be very, fruitful for parents indeed to move to that sharpening of the process. And I think what's also important to say here is that every child is different and every family is different. So, it can take 2 weeks. It can take a month. We really encourage that parents practice and don't get discouraged and just keep practicing because we really believe and we see that change comes sometimes later than we would like it to be, perhaps, but it's still coming. So I just want to encourage parents to continue that with that work.
I think that's good. Now we have a second cycle. And the second cycle is going to help us when the child is not responding in the right way. The second cycle we call the off-track cycle. The first cycle is the getting things done cycle or the instruction routine. But when a child's doing the wrong thing, we have to move to a different way of parenting and we have to have a plan. And so over the next, this session and the next one, we're going to talk about this this correction cycle. And when a child's off track, we parent in a different way. You can't keep trying to get things done when a child's yelling at you. Mm-hmm. If a child's having a bad attitude and yelling at you and you're trying to get things done, then essentially you're validating this child's poor response and saying, oh, it's okay to yell at me. Let's keep getting things done. Now we have a second cycle and we're going to say, no, you're off track. And when you're off track, this is what's going to happen. Now, this is a built off of the whole concept of repentance in the Bible, which is a change of heart. And so what we want to do is we want to have what we call a break. And now the break is not timeout. It's not a punishment. It's an adult skill. When you're off track, the first thing you need to do is pull back and say, whoa, man, I got a problem here. I need to pause here for a moment. And the child is sent to a break, probably not their room. We don't really like the room. It's more of a entertainment center. I'd rather send them to the hall or the bottom step or something like that. And the child is sent on a mission. I would use these exact words. You need to take a break, settle down, change your heart, and come back and see me when you're ready. Mm. Notice we've transferred responsibility to the child to come back when they are ready because we're allowing the child to participate in this readiness process. Now, sometimes they'll come back, they're not ready. So we don't give them ultimate control, but we are saying to the child in a vision meeting at the beginning, let me explain to you what the break is. Mm. The break is an adult skill. And because you're 4 now, or because you're 8 now, or 12 now, I'm going to let you help determine the length of time there. I'm not going to set a time unless your heart isn't changed. Okay. I'm going to allow you to come back when your heart is changed. That means you need to settle down. We're not asking them to evaluate what they did wrong or anything else. Just settle down, come back and be willing to work on the problem. That's all. And we'll debrief with them when they come back. But the point is we're de-escalating the intensity that often takes place during correction times in a family. And that de-escalation is important, and the break becomes this key tool that we use. It's the hardest thing we teach. So parents can get stuck here. We have to go over this for a couple of weeks usually to help parents understand what this is. The child certainly may resist this, especially if they've been raised on timeout, which is more of a punishment for a child. Some children don't like correction, and when you correct them, they defend themselves or blame other people. All of that we're trying to work on. This is a very important part of the heart. And so by sending a child to take a break and settle down, we can see some major change take place in the whole process of change with the child.
Yeah, I want to just add something here, Dr. Scott, especially around indeed the fact that children can grow a bit, especially if we practice a lot, they can grow sometimes a bit into the belief that the break can be a sort of a punishment. And of course, I say of course, but we would really like to avoid that. I know I had that, and I still sometimes have it. If I use the break, often my son tends to have ADHD challenges, and so we have days in which we use the break a lot, and it's very challenging to actually do that in a way in which can still feel that the break is it's not a punishment. So it's important to just explain if the child is old enough to understand, to explain that you just, you know, it's not a punishment, and it's actually just for them to take time to calm down. And you also do sometimes go in a break as a parent when you are feeling angry or upset and you need to calm down. Dr. Scott, do you have any advice for this, but also for the fact that, for example, we can experience that as punishment, or kids can experience that as punishment, but do you have also some advice for older children who are perhaps not at the age where they can be put on the stairs, or they can be, let's say, sent somewhere to take a break with these words? What is your advice here?
Yeah, good question. I think that let's do with two problems. One is let's just address the older child for a moment, because I think all life stops for this child. In other words, we're not going to the mall. You're not using the computer. You don't even have a bedroom. You know, there's this, all life stops until you're willing to talk to me about the way you treated me when we were in the hall a moment ago. So the break is an important tool to use with teens that basically says, we're not going to live this way, and we're not going to go on until we resolve this. Don't expect me to take you to the soccer game or anywhere else until we resolve this. There's this, you need to come back and talk to me about it. So there is this something, the break is something we use with older children. And frankly, it's something that adults need to use as well. Many adults do that, but there are some who don't. They get intense, and when there's something wrong, they just push forward. So when a child does that, and let's say you say to a child, you need to go take a break, and your child says, no, I'm not going to do that. Well, I think what you want to do is you want to say in an authoritative voice, not yelling or being harsh, you need to go take a break now. And then, because we're using the same words we use in the instruction routine, which is often where we learn the sense of obligation to do what we need to do, even though we don't want to, or we don't feel like it, or we're upset. So we learn that in the instruction routine, but now we're bringing it into the break in a correction kind of a mode. And so we're saying, you need to go take a break now. And if the child says no, again, you just simply say, you're doing the wrong thing, and walk away. Because now we're using the process of time to allow the conscience to work and the emotions to settle. See, one of the things we're trying to do with the break is not allow the emotions to intensify. And if parents feel like they have to win and they have to stay in a battle of some kind, then often the child just becomes more resistant. But if you say to a child, you're doing the wrong thing, you need to go take a break, and then you walk away and come back 5 minutes later, and you say, the next thing that needs to happen for you is you need to go sit in the break place where I told you to sit. And so what we're doing is we're not escalating, but the break becomes this valuable tool that children will eventually use on their own. So it's very common for children, by the time we get done with this program, or after they practice the break a lot, to be able to, they're getting frustrated with their brother or something, is, I need to take a break. You know, that's what we're trying to produce inside of children, this recognition that they are off track. And being off track means you need to take specific kind of actions. I tell kids there's only one step. When you're off track, there's only one option, and that is pull back and settle down. That's what we call the break. And when you do that, then you can reorient yourself and come back into the situation. Now, we're not asking them to reorient themselves in a break. At this point, it's just learn how to take a break and come back out of it ready to work on the problem. Now, when we talk in our next session, we'll talk about how to handle that and what to say and so on. But now, just in this week, the assignment is to practice the break. When your child gets off track, practice the break. And if you have to practice at non-disciplined times, that is, your child's not used to the break, you might have to say, okay, look, we're going to have dinner in a few minutes. Go show me you can take a break and then come back. And the child says, I didn't do anything wrong. No, the break isn't about doing something wrong. Often the break is allowing you to get ready for the next things in life. And we're about to have dinner. Why don't you go think of a nice story or a question you can ask of someone or tell a joke so that when you come to dinner, you're ready for that. So this break is going to be a valuable tool for resetting a child, for calming a child down, for getting on track when you're off track. All of those things happen. The break is quite valuable, although it's very difficult to teach children sometimes.
Yeah, indeed. So that's why we're encouraging parents to persevere and not give up. We do have some further materials available for those of you who are interested in joining the Parenting Biblical Coaching Program. There are quite some materials available, including infographics and worksheets and reading that is available. So if you do have questions, please get in touch. Dr. Scott, we are coming close to our final thoughts of this episode. I would like you to please share, if you don't mind, a biblical story on which I think this break is based on. You mentioned the story of Jonah throughout the course, and I think it's really valuable indeed. I think the parents would really understand, if they haven't heard about the break before, they would really understand why this is such a important kind, an important one.
Good. Every week in the Biblical Parenting Coaching Program, I tell a Bible story that ties this back in. And certainly in this week, we're talking about the story of Jonah. Because in the story of Jonah, Jonah chapter 1, it says, the word of the Lord came to Jonah and said, get up and go to Nineveh. You see, God wanted to get something done. He's starting to use cycle number one. And he's giving instructions to Jonah that he needs to get up and go to Nineveh. That's what you need to do. But Jonah gets off track. And just like a three-year-old in a grocery store, he runs the other way. And so God essentially says, okay, I'm going to have to discipline this boy. What tool should I use here? I know, I'll use a break. And where should I have him sit? Oh, I've got a great place to have him sit. And so God creates this fish, and Jonah's thrown overboard. And Jonah in Jonah chapter 2 is in this fish until the end of the chapter, where he is ready to come out. Takes him 3 days. I say to kids, do you realize it took Jonah 3 days to sit in the belly of a fish before he was ready to change? I hope it doesn't take you that long. So he's in this fish for 3 days until his heart's ready, and then he's ready to change. And he says to the Lord, Lord, I'm ready. My heart's changed. And so God says, okay. They're on this detour. You see, they're in cycle number two now. And so they're not getting things done. God had to say, okay, I'm going to put the Ninevites on hold. We're not going to go to the soccer game. We're not going to do the things you want to do or don't want to do right now. We're not even going to try that. And so it's interesting. God puts the Ninevites on hold while he's working in the heart of this particular young man, Jonah. And then when Jonah's ready, it says in Jonah chapter 3, after he was spit up and put on the shore, he says, and the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time, saying, get up and go to Nineveh. You see, there's this. The neat thing is God gives us second chances. He gives us a second word from the Lord here. I really like that. Because he's now going back to cycle number one. Okay, we're done with our correction time here. Now we can go back and we're going to practice doing the right thing, which is an important part here. And I'm going to tell you what to do, and this time you're going to do it. And Jonah does. So there's this demonstration of being off track and then working through a process to get back on track. So that's what we see in this passage.
Yeah, that's so amazing. Such a powerful story. And thank you, Dr. Scott, for sharing that. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please share this episode if you think there is somebody in your life, a friend, another parent that you know that could benefit from it. And do send us your experiences as you try to implement this in your life. Until next time, when we're going to approach week 3, please stay focused on the tasks and keep calm. And we will be sharing more in a future episode. Take care and God bless you.